Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Jennifer Wofford.
Oh my. It's fascinating hearing your first name.
I know.
Sometimes I forget you have one.
I really don't. I'm really just trying to get everybody to the point of calling me Wofford only, like Cher or Prince, which are the most logical comparisons.
It's kind of interesting.
Or like any pet you've ever had.
It's interesting how using someone's last name can be more or less intimate.
Well, again, I was born into the generation where every girl child within a span of 5 years was named Jennifer. So there's a lot of us.
Oh, sure enough.
And there are a few Woffords.
Sure enough. All right. So anyhow, Woffs.
Yes, Rhodes.
I'm hoping through this recording I'll use every variation.
Does the public know what's happened to Maysoon? I want
them
to know,
right.
I didn't kill
Maysoon,
her.
Maysoon, sure enough.
She's not dead.
No, she is in Italy. The usual co-host of the show, Maysoon Wazwaz, is in Italy, and thankfully Wofford has come to fill in.
But yeah, this is not like one of those Black Swan showgirl situations where I pushed her down a staircase and took on her role or whatever. You know, I just want you all to know that.
A big event in the Bay Area art world this last week or so was the opening of Minnesota Street Projects, which I have continually been saying is some kind of conspiracy scheme by reptilian shapeshifters from outer space. But seems like more and more people are on board with this being a positive non-reptilian endeavor.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, the old V miniseries on television show, I mean, everybody thought that, you know, the visitors were totally cool for a really, really long time, and then, of course, it turned out they were not. I went there just ready to talk mad shit and actually enjoyed it, and, you know, the reptilian shifters are very convincing. I actually had a good time.
Sure.
Sorry, I mean, I can find something controversial to say, I'm sure.
Did you see some of the art?
I even saw some of the art, which I generally have no expectation of doing on an opening event. I just assume that it's basically just a large bar with more people you know in it. I really assume it's about seeing art, which I know sounds terrible, but it's true. No, I really loved the Chigoya show.
Oh, yes. I've heard rave reviews.
Angle Gilbert. And it's just so exciting to see what Ed Gilbert is doing to sort of refresh and renew the space. Yeah, in Paula's now absence.
No shit to talk about any part of it, huh?
I wasn't there long enough. I could, you know, they started turning off the lights at 10 o'clock, you know, the old flash on, flash off thing. No, I guess I wasn't there quite long enough to talk as much shit as I expected to. Like, I really love that they dedicated a corner of the upstairs gallery space to the San Francisco Arts Education Project.
Oh, yep.
So shout out to them. I think that that's awesome. They've committed that kind of prime real estate to an organization that's doing some real, like, on-the-ground work here in SF. We can talk about making fun of everybody who stood in line, but, I mean, I mostly felt bad for them, so. And they were all pretty chipper about it, so.
God bless them. Maybe
God bless
this
them.
Is, like, the turning point.
But not just for
places to have spaces.
Good horror movie begins with sort of this wonderful, sort of placid, sort of optimistic, you know, beginning. So let's see what happens.
Okay, sure enough. Speaking of alien shapeshifters, Gagosian is coming and opening a space right by SF MoMA, which I actually predicted because I went to New York recently and there was a Gagosian gallery. A gag gallery over by the Met. And I was like, that's cool because, like, people go to the Met and they're like, man, I wish I could have one of these in my house. And then you just roll over to Gago and grab one, bring it home with you.
Yeah. Well, it's not as if there weren't galleries down around that area, you know, before and to, you know.
In San Francisco,
and still, right? In that, you know, in the proximity of SF MoMA. But, yeah, with Gagosian, that's as much a super calculating move to sort of tap into tech and money and new international money that's here in town than, you know, it is about any long-term investment in the arts community here. And I'd be super shocked if they show anybody local.
I solicited somewhat of a listener question.
That sounds shifty, Kate.
In a way. Asking for advice for people in their first year of an MFA program.
Oh, God. I think anybody who's had an MFA has got something.
But this has to apply to first year specifically. because I think we've given a lot of advice on the show. Actually, they mentioned the last time I talked about grad student advice, I talked about getting 8 hours of sleep every night, and I still stand by that. But first year in particular.
Well, you go first, because...
I feel like what would help some people in first year of grad school is to just kiss that money goodbye. Don't fret about it. I feel like everyone in the first year when I was in grad school, it took you the whole first year to come to terms with how much debt they just took on before they could, like, do anything worthwhile.
Yeah.
So just know that you don't ever have to pay that back.
I guess I went to the Berkeley program, so I came out with less debt and was less stressed out about it. But I do feel like there's a lot of moments where, when you're in your first year of the program, you're trying to wrap your head around the ambitious scale at which you want to work and being terrified of what that might cost you emotionally or financially or, you know, on a lot of different fronts. And I kind of feel like, I mean, why are you there if not to take certain kinds of risks? I mean, there's productive risks and very unhealthy risks, like don't do this while shooting up heroin, maybe.
Don't do heroin.
Yeah, I mean...
That was another one from the last time.
But generally speaking, it's known
don't
to be bad for you.
Don't do drugs.
I would say that there's a lot of moments, I think, your first year where you're really stressed out and overwhelmed, and you haven't usually quite hit the embittered grad student phase. By the way, that's normal. Everybody is an embittered grad student, at least for like some portion of their experience, or they have to kind of get the bitter aftertaste out of their mouth right after completing their degree. But, you know, I guess in a perfect world, you try to anticipate and avoid having to be the cliche of the embittered grad student and put enough stuff into place proactively that are going to make this experience really amazing for you. And it's not easy. It's supposed to kind of suck at times, and you're supposed to come to a crisis point and a breaking point. Like, you are supposed to do that. But there's ways in which I think you can advocate for yourself and be proactive about just making it a healthier, crushing experience. you know, like, just to understand that, yeah, some people are going to tell you your stuff sucks, and you're going to learn how to deal with that and reject it or accept certain portions of it to grow your work.
They got a pretty legit program over there, huh, at Cal.
Yeah, but you know, it varies from cohort to cohort. You know, you figure out who your allies and who your maybe, I don't want to say enemies, but the people, you figure out who you can trust and work with and who maybe you shouldn't take them too seriously. Because there are going to be folks in any program, and I'm not speaking to Cal at all specifically here, where there's just going to be somebody who's an asshole, and you're going to let them crush you more than they deserve, and like that's just not something that's happy or healthy for anyone.
Hey, Wofford.
Hey, Rhodes.
Go Bears.
Go Bears. Does Mills have a mascot?
Cyclones. Go Cyclones.
How is Mills the... Okay, I know that's a side conversation, but that's a...
No, that's a very
both amazing,
on point.
But strange sort of mascot
to have.
So why
is it Cyclones?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of good things about it. It's gender non-specific. You know, it's not like...
You know, like the Mills menstrual cyclones never came up ever for anybody at the college? Really?
Is that the first thing you thought of?
Absolutely.
You're a special person, though.
Thank you.
The Mills menstrual cyclones.
Never heard of a cyclone in the Bay Area. I've lived here a very long time.
And the mascot, like the little dress-up person, was pretty... It was sad to begin with. They just redesigned it, and it's a little more exciting now.
Okay.
It kind of looks like a weird gray pizza slice or something. They don't have a ton of sports presence that I'm aware of, but then again, I apologize to all the athletes.
UC Santa Cruz like the banana slug or something
awesome? Yeah, and like UC Davis is the Aggies.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Aggies, though, for agricultural schools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What does that mean, though? The agriculturalists?
Like, isn't Texas A&M, aren't they the Aggies also? I just think it's some sort of shortened version of agricultural something.
Well,
Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but...
You think that the Mills Mental... The Mills Menstrual Cyclones is bad, but they've got the Crimson Tide down in Alabama or whatever.
And one and the same. You know, I would say the Menstrual Cyclones sound a lot more intimidating.
Bad news, Waffy.
Oh no, what, Cades? What's happened? Did I say Cades?
I
like Cades. What's happened?
Flax closed.
Oh,
today's
no.
We're recording this on Saturday, and today is the first day of closure.
Yes, we were having a little lunch at D'Alessio next door to Flax in San Francisco on Market Street.
A great place if you're looking for a salad bar, because I didn't know, I had to go to Pleasanton to get a good salad bar.
Anyway, we were sitting outside of D'Alessio watching all the sad people go up to the door of Flax and see the big sign and then sort of try the door anyway, because that's what people do even when they see a sign that says closed.
And yeah, they act like there's something they can do to change that.
We watched one group of four people hold hands
prayer.
And do like a prayer circle.
They did a legit prayer.
And we think, we don't know what's going on there, but...
I wish you just go ahead and say...
Satanists. I think they were Satanists.
Okay.
But, you know,
I have friends that are kind of into Satan, and I don't know if they pray
like
that.
Well, I didn't say it was a bad thing.
No,
I was just making general...
No, I never would think that you would say anything bad about a Satanist.
No.
But I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know if that's their MO for prayer.
Yeah, well,
seems
they did,
like there would be a little more.
I feel like they would have drawn a pentagram on the floor or
something. Or something with herbs or taking their clothes off.
Yeah.
Sensual.
Yeah.
Satanism, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, besides the Satanists, it just seemed like, you know, people kind of shuffling up to the door and looking sad and shuffling off again. But, you know, I'm bummed because Flax was near my house and it's super easy for me to wander over there and buy things. But I'm not bummed in the sense that I think Flax has made some prudent business decisions. I think that it's going to be amazing for Oakland.
Yeah,
and
they're coming
to
West Oakland,
and they've got their store
right?
in Fort Mason, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
that you can take your boat to.
Yeah, and I was ranting about this at lunch, but back to the same thing. Like, San Franciscans are sometimes like, oh my God, it's the end of the world if something moves to Oakland. It's not a bad thing, folks. It's actually often a good thing. It's cool. So, all the best to Flax. Very excited to shop at the new Flax in Oakland. And fuck Dick Blick. So, all you artists who shop at Blick Art Materials.
Can you break this down for me?
Yeah. You might as well be shopping at Walmart or Starbucks or whatever, like, large corporate structure has been sort of putting all the little guys out of business. Thank you for contributing to that. Stop shopping at Dick Blick. That is all.
Alternatives. You got Flax.
You got Flax. You've got Artist and
Artist
Craftsman.
And Berkeley.
Mm. There's a lot of regional sort of, I mean, like, there's weird little places you wouldn't think about. Like, because I teach at USF, a lot of my students will go buy stuff on Haight Street at Mendel's Art Supplies, which
is cool.
You know, I think it's a little bit pricey, but, you know, you can also buy glitter and feathers, which is always a nice thing in arts and crafts store, so.
Yes.
Yeah. And to be fair, I shopped at Blick in the past myself. I understand it's affordable, but mostly I just feel like there are alternatives. And you spend a couple bucks more as an artist, like maybe shop a little more ethically, huh?
Damn right. Especially if you're making some art that's like anti-establishment.
Yeah. So, yes, you know, Flax is dead. Long live Flax. I wish them all the best.
I'm excited for you to move to Oakland now.
Yeah, it's not happening this minute, but when it is time to leave San Francisco, I will not be sad. Oh, that's the other thing I was going to bring up in relation to Flax. So for all of you East Bay folks who understand about the old Super Long's drugstore, which I refuse to acknowledge was ever a CVS, that
you
was the other arts hub.
You did acknowledge it by not acknowledging
it
verbally.
And I suppose I'm contradicting myself. I'm going to say don't shop at Blick, but shop at a drugstore that's a corporate chain. Super Long's was a very special place, though, and all of you who remember Super Long's will attest to that.
Please call in with your memories of Super Long's at 419-351-6606, or you can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com, or you can tweet in your Super Long's memories to @PineTreePodcast. Well, what about it?
What about it?
You loved it. It was huge.
I actually was there on my birthday around midnight three different times just because I love wandering around in it. It was really just a magical haven for me. I don't know. It was just like the fact that they had so many different kinds of toilet seats next to so many different kinds of yarn, next to so many different kinds of gardening supplies and sort of like bolts of fabric, ramen. Like, I don't know. It was anything but a drugstore. It was just a very wonderful and eclectic and strange place. And as an art teacher, it was always the perfect place to go shopping for art supplies at, say, 12 or 1 a.m. when you needed them for an assignment with your students the next day. I had a Facebook group called Long Live Longs.
Damn.
And there were a lot of members, and we were very powerful. And we used to post pictures of Long's drugs a lot to our little Facebook page. Yeah, but I think watching kind of Flax this past week as I was going there every day to kind of watch the shelves empty and the store become sort of hollow and cavernous reminded me a lot of the slow death of Long's drugs.
Does it remind you of mortality?
It does.
Human mortality?
It does.
It's okay. It's okay.
But it's almost Easter, so we can always think about renewal.
Yeah, sure enough. Resurrection.
You just said erection.
I just had a workshop yesterday in Turlock,
in
Central Valley.
And how did it go?
Fantastic.
What was the workshop about?
Oh, it was just like a one-day comics workshop. Great students. But the main thing was that the Central Valley is Ohio, except hotter.
Yes, drier, too. A lot drier.
But everything reminded me of Ohio, and I want to go back. Get some apple cider.
But actually, that makes me want to ask you, because I've been super geeked out on comics lately.
Yay.
Why does Congratulations Pine Tree not talk more about comics? And why don't people in the art world in the Bay Area talk more about comics? Comics are awesome, folks.
People do. We did have Veronica Graham on. She's a comics artist, and like she does all kinds of printmaking and virtual reality and stuff.
Maybe I had not listened to that episode then.
It's like episode 8.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a long way back. I'll have
archives.
A link in the underworld.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know why we don't talk about it more. I think because most of my comics knowledge is not Bay Area centric. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I read tons of comics, but not many from artists in the Bay Area that I know of. Except I did read Over Easy by Mimi Pond, and that's about the Bay Area.
Yes, which I love.
That was a great one.
I think I'm partly thinking about this because I just had to put together a course proposal for a comics class that's Bay Area-centric. And
oh,
there's
cool.
just things that I didn't even
you
I mean,
should
I knew
send
there
me
was
some.
Long history here with, you know, places like Last Gasp, you know, sort of basically being founded here and putting out some of the earliest sort of depraved underground comics. But I didn't know the oldest or first comic book store in the United States was in the Mission District.
No shit,
23rd.
Where?
It was called, I think it was just called something like Mission Comic Book Store or something. It didn't have a very exciting name, but Gary Arlington was the guy that founded it. I think I just watched the movie version of Diary of a Teenage Girl, which was...
Hell yeah, was that good or what?
Really?
I loved
intense.
It.
Intense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when she
yeah.
fucking turns into a bird.
Yeah, there was some, it was dark and strange, but I think really honest
and, like,
and accurate on
a
lot of stuff. Yeah, it was really. But anyway, that's just thinking more about the comic and about Phoebe Gluckner.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's just a lot of really great sort of, but again, in the sort of wildly segregated parts of the art world, which is how much, you know, we talk about gallery and museum stuff versus folks who are working in design illustration versus all the folks who are, you know, in the comics world.
There's even galleries that we never talk about.
Yeah.
Right?
So, we can't do it all in this show, folks.
So there's a new show up over there at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts.
Well, it, you know, it's often called Yubba Bubba, so.
Do people call it that?
The Yubba Bubba.
Really?
Some folks. Not everybody. But
some? You really have your thumb on the pulse.
Yeah, I got my thumb on something.
Anyhow, the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts has a new show up curated by Christian Frock.
Called Take This Hammer.
And you saw, I didn't go yet.
I again, in that category of I don't really understand openings to be an experience of seeing the art very well, but I went to the opening night last Friday, and it was great. It was just such a great festive environment. I mean, I don't know, in sort of in light of sort of what was happening with the Alex Nieto case this week and how many people's spirits were really crushed. I mean, there was such a nice, feisty, loving activist energy in the space, and it was like a super, super diverse crowd, which is also something I wish I saw more of at Bay Area art openings, and was not that true of the Minnesota Street Art Project.
Uh-huh.
It was just nice to see that all in action at the opening. As for the art, I have to go back and see that properly when I'm not totally distracted by, you know, 5 million friends being someplace.
I feel like most of the reviews we have on the show are reviews of the vibe.
Yeah, it's California, folks. Just, you know, deal with it. It's what we do out here. We just pick up on vibes.
How do you sharpen your vibe? What would you call that? Your vibe sensitivity.
It's like a certain kind of soap you're supposed to use.
What soap is that?
I can't tell
it's
you.
It's that one with all the Bible verses all
over
know.
It. You'll know when it comes to you.
Yeah. It's like they send it to you or it just shows
just when
up
you're
one
ready.
Day?
When you're ready,
it
just
it
arrives.
Comes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like Amazon, like drones bring it to you.
That doesn't seem like how that would come.
You don't trust me.
Anyhow, so overall score?
Yes. Yes, definitely score.
Oh. I was looking for like a 1 through 10, but you were just like,
yeah, I was
score.
Like, score. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's great. That's our new scoring system. It's just score just, yes. Or don't score.
Score or no score. Yes.
All right, fair enough. Okay, let's open up our segment, redaction segment. But again, this is going to be a personal redaction, not one from the show. I would like to redact that I didn't realize I was on a thread on a certain social network. And sure enough, it was about the last episode where we interviewed Julia Bryan Wilson. And someone said that it was their class that Julia Bryan Wilson came to speak to, which she mentioned in the show. And I was like, oh, is Richard Meyer the professor of that class? And she was like, no, she came to speak to my students. And I was like,
oh, so bad.
It was a tool of the patriarchy.
So bad.
Right?
I did not think you were sexist, but now I do.
I felt sexist. Yeah, I did. So I would like to redact that and full apologies. I'm not going to mention who it was. Should I?
No.
Okay.
You know who you are.
I'm a major tool of the patriarchy. And then another person who I also won't mention sent me a music video. Well, actually, it was a taping of a live performance from 1985 where Cyndi Lauper sings the song, which was written by Prince, When You Were Mine. Do you know that song?
Mm-hmm.
And she does a fantastic performance of it, rousing as can be. And she comes out of this giant, very vaginal...
Tell me more.
...fissure.
Yes.
In like a giant assemblage wall sculpture made out of like refuse. And I think maybe they were thinking of my recology thing. That I'm at recology. So I didn't know really why the person sent it to me, but long story short, I was like, oh, looks like Cyndi Lauper's set designers just got done with their recology residency. And then it turned out that maybe Cyndi Lauper made it.
Whoa.
And another time where I was a tool of the patriarchy. Why can't a woman singer make her own giant assemblage vagina?
Why not? Indeed.
So I think I need to do some real introspection.
There's some soul searching you're going to have to do this week.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. I think the Mills menstrual cyclone failed me. Have you ever had a moment where you thought you might be sexist?
Oh, man. We
against
all have
women.
We all have those moments and we're all uncomfortable with them when we have them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then
mm-hmm.
we're really embarrassed when we realize.
Okay, well, you don't have to mention it.
I'm trying to think of a specific example, but I know for sure. Like, there's always one where I'm like, oh, are you really not done with this, Wofford? Not yet. Yeah.
Hmm. Do you refer to yourself as Wofford
yes,
in your own mind?
I do. I refer to myself as Wofford.
Another thing about the vibes.
Neti Pots.
Neti Pots
help you get to that sort of plane of existence that allows you to sense the vibes at openings better.
How do you not drown?
You'll find out.
So you put a boiling water into a strangely shaped tea kettle and pour it into your nose.
It's not boiling. It's pleasantly warm.
Okay,
it has some sort
go
of saline
on.
Packet in it.
Sure
so
enough.
It's also very pleasantly balanced so that when it goes in one side and out the other.
It goes out the other nostril.
Yes, it's very exciting.
Why?
Because it flushes out all the allergens and the stuff in there that's causing the irritation.
Did you do
and
this
it allows
as a...
you to sort of achieve the vibes. My vibe sense is way better than it ever used to be.
And now how do you keep the brain-eating bacteria out?
I don't use unboiled water from Louisiana.
Okay.
That's the only place that's actually happened. That's not a diss in Louisiana, but there was were the only documented cases where people were using, I think, tap water that hadn't been boiled first.
Uh-huh.
And just like warming it in the microwave or something like that.
I gotta say, though, I was trying to think of another variation on Wofford.
There are so many.
I wanted to say Wofford space.
Oh, I actually had a waffus in my old high school when I was a high school art teacher. Yeah, my sort of little cubby that I kept my desk and everything in was called the Woffice. I had a little sign, W-O-F-F-I-C-E.
Good quick spelling without dropping any letters.
Absolutely.
Commendable. Yeah. Anyhow, point is, Woffice.
We're in the Woffice right now, by the way.
I just have to let you know that although boiling can kill bacteria, it cannot kill prions, which are what cause mad cow disease.
Got it. I think you're actually technically supposed to use distilled water, which I don't know. How's that different?
How do you distill water?
You buy distilled water in gallon things the same way you do boiled water.
How do they distill it? Does that mean it like condensates off the side of something?
All I know is that people have been putting like salt water up their noses for centuries, and most people don't die. So I think it's okay.
I got another one.
Yes.
General Schwarzwaff.
That's okay.
No. Maybe?
No, that kind of sucks.
Okay. All right. Sure enough. As you've been part of the SOEX community for longer than any living person.
Man, I've been with Southern Exposure in one weird capacity or another for over 20 years. So I was there during the Mike Bloxstein years and the Trisha Lagasso years, obviously the Courtney Fink years, and now the Patricia Maloney era. And I'm excited about it. Like, just knowing the history of the place, they picked the right person for the job. I don't know who the other candidates were, but I feel super, super good about it being Maloney. So.
Great. I think that's a pretty big deal.
I think Lee Lehman, who was sort of the interim director, sort of during the transition.
Oh, yeah, she was
fabulous.
I really
loved
her.
So I also just want to give her a shout out because I think that was huge.
Yeah.
And just with Val Imus and Lisa Martin, Nicholas Wiley, and Claire LaRose, they're all kind of holding
Full
it together really, really well.
Each one. So. Yes.
Yay, SOEX.
Yeah,
congratulations.
I love that place.
Oh,
good job. That's very appropriate. Actually, that reminds me of another listener question that they had specifically for you. We like to ask people a lot about collaborating and how they do collaborations and stuff and how they manage it physically and emotionally. And I just wondered if you had a take on that at all.
Eliza Barrios, Rianne Estrada, and I have been collaborating as mail order brides / mob for 20 years. And,
Jesus
you know, this
Christ.
Is in between sort of our day jobs and our own independent individual solo art practices and, you know, other sort of moving and things like that. So I think there are enough gaps between each of our collaborations that we never, you know, quite want to kill each other. But we've come close on occasion. But I think it just really comes down to collaboration. Even when you're bickering and you're struggling to kind of agree on a project, I think you just get to some really, really interesting places that you can't get on your own when you're just agreeing with yourself or doubting yourself. Like, it's really actually fantastic to have a second and even a third voice to kind of, you know, talk things out with or debate or just, you know, laugh. Like, a huge amount of, you know, the idiocy that is the mail order prizes. Three of us just, like, falling apart laughing about something that sort of determines the course of our project. And then, of course, later on, we're angry at each other and we argue about it. But at this point, again, 20 years in, we know each other so damn well that it works. It's fine, you know.
Do you have a go-to way that you resolve disputes?
For a long time, actually, it really is still Rochambeau. Like, we'll just do rock, paper, scissors. It's basically 2 out of 3 wins. If the minority in the group feels extremely strongly about it, then we'll sort of usually accommodate that person arguing back for a while. But sometimes we just shelve something until we're all ready to sort of, you know, be at peace about it. But honestly, I mean, we've just done this for so long. Like, it never really gets to a point of, like, a fight. It's just mostly like, you know, one of us gets a little bent out of shape because, you know, somebody else doesn't, you know, see eye to eye with them. And then it gets resolved because we're all good at what we do. And so if it doesn't get done my way, like, the fact that it gets done Rianne's way or Eliza's way is usually just as fine. It just doesn't happen to be mine. You gotta have, you know, the right collaborators. You know, Eliza and Rianne are basically like family to me at this point. You know, I trust them, you know, completely. And we know each other ridiculously well. So do you have the right collaborators is a huge part of this. I don't think collaboration is inherently always successful. Some people you should never, never collaborate with. They are horrible and you should not work with them. So determine whether it's something that both people can grow from or whether it's just not going to happen.
Do you ever do concurrent neti potting?
No, but we have shared a neti pot, which you're not supposed to do.
That is a real commitment.
Yeah.
All three of you?
Not like simultaneously in some weird porny way. Like one of us uses it, washes it out,
sort of sterile.
I just want it to be really clear to all you perverts out there that the neti pot gets washed and then loaned to another bride. It's only happened once.
P.S. listeners, good news for Patricia Carino.
Yeah.
We're very excited about this news here at CPT. Just got a curator job at the San Jose Institute of Contemporary Art.
Yeah, I think she's the curator and I think director of public programs or some. I think that's something like her title.
I have no idea, but yes. It's good she got a job there.
Yeah.
And we're stoked.
Yeah, so that's...
And hopefully she can give us a ride to the shows they have.
Yeah, we needed to hitch a ride to San Jose with her.
She can drive stick shift.
Yeah, it's just nice. Look, two Patricias moving into awesome jobs around the same time. We like that. St. Patrick's Day this past week. There's a lot of Patty going on here.
Sure enough. All right, so congratulations to you, Patricia Carino.
Congratulations.
And congratulations to you, Waffles.
Congratulations to you, Kate Rhodes.
And thank you so much for co-hosting the show with me today. I just like saying that this is the last episode even when it's not. So let's go ahead and say this is the last episode of the show.
This is the last episode of the show.
From the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between.
This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.